Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, I think it is. And if you'd like to join us, and we have a car show for the next 2 hours, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And there's three of us sitting at the counter. We've got Tom from Action Auto, and he works on all kinds of cars, right?
Absolutely.
From BMWs to Mercury Zephyrs. Can we go?
Well, the Zephyrs are not...
I needed something with a Z.
Yeah.
A to Z.
So, what about a Nissan Z?
Oh, yeah. A Z car there. And mechanical work from engine overhauls to oil changes.
Absolutely.
Fair enough?
Yep.
Okay. And then we got Greg here from Phoenix Body Works. And we just met him today. And
that's not true.
Don't believe a thing.
And I've been talking to him all morning about the employees just wrecked my truck. So he confirmed what I was told, that the bed is welded and no longer bolted to the rest of the bed. So the front panel and the tailgate and the floor, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So my son says, oh, we're going to take care of this. And I've changed my mind because I don't think that's a good idea.
No, so, we're going to need to take care of this for you.
Okay. All right. And you know what? I'll get it a lot quicker from you. But I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody else. I'm happy to stand in line. I have too many customers tell me that they want to move to the front of the line. And that that's tough for me to do. So I want to make sure you know that I'll just take my place. So
well, we wouldn't move you up anyway.
That's fine. But I know Heather. And
that's
I know
true.
She actually runs your operation very much like my daughter, Andy.
Well, yes, yeah, she's excellent in the front. And but Rudy runs the day-to-day operation and does a great job. And he's fair with everybody. You know, and, he doesn't play favorites, so you won't get anywhere with them
except to get
your truck done right.
Well, I have pictures with you with a woman other than your wife, so maybe Rudy will give me a discount for that.
That could be a problem.
Of course, you know I'm teasing you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, I got some stuff that I put together, and actually the first one belongs to you. This is Mark's do's and don'ts, but they're really don'ts. Don't wear your seatbelt. You'll look fine with stitches all over your face.
Well, and powder burns on your face when the airbag goes off.
Okay.
Your face is in it.
Okay. All right. And then I have another one for you. It was don't belt your passengers because it doesn't hurt when they're flying around the inside of the car and they hit you.
It does hurt badly.
He was one of those passengers.
Oh, yeah? You want to tell us about that?
I don't remember, Tom.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead and tell the story, Tom.
Well, it was just last up in Las Vegas.
Okay.
I was going to change a lane and decided I didn't.
Oh.
Mark came into the front seat.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We were just cruising. We just got on the freeway. And
yeah.
I'm sitting in the center, and he's got a brand new Dodge Diesel, and he's got a really nice big console. And I'm not buckled up yet. All of a sudden, Tom's a very fast driver.
Yeah.
Flies and then brakes, and I roll up onto the console. I'm in between him and Rudy,
yeah.
And had to push myself back, and then I buckled up.
Yeah. Don't ignore how old your tires are. Just drive until you can see the air inside. Don't ignore your dashboard airbag light. Just know it's not going to work when the light is on.
That's right.
Okay. These are things a lot of people don't know. It's interesting, but the yellow light on the dash is quite different than the red light on the dash, and it's just like a traffic signal. Yellow is go ahead and drive, caution, you got a problem. But when it's red, it's the oil light, the overheat light, and that means you got to stop. But not at the next exit, and not at your house 3 miles away.
Right.
So we had somebody bring a car in, I don't know, a couple months ago. The motor is one big melted piece of metal. And, you know, what happened on it overheated. Okay, but there's more to this story. Well, you'll have to ask my wife. I'm not asking your wife. I already know what happened here.
It'll make it another couple miles.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It'll make it another couple miles.
That was a don't.
Yeah.
Don't make it a couple more miles.
Don't worry. As soon as you look up for your phone, you'll need another 3 to 5 seconds to stop before you hit the car in front of you. Don't let it bother you that you're traveling at 55 miles an hour. You're traveling 3 football fields a second. So when you look up, you've traveled plus two football fields at 55 miles an hour because we've timed people. And so think about this. You're driving along, and then you look down, and you're looking at the thing, and we're already at 2-3 seconds, and then you look up. So obviously, if you're doing 15 miles an hour, it's not that bad. But if you're doing 55 and north of that, it's 1.5 times your speed in feet. So 60 miles an hour is 90 feet a second. So it's that kind of thing. And we're trying to drive that home with people with respect to looking at their phones because they think this is going to be all right. So I'm going to ask you two, do you know anybody who's ever admitted to you that when they're driving down the road and they do look up, they might be in a different lane?
Yes.
Tom?
Oh, it happens.
and you can see people. If you're following somebody, you can see them cross or get close to the middle or get close to the fog line and then jerk back, and you can see their head bobbing up and down.
Absolutely.
So you can see who's doing that.
Those driverless cars are coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you think we're going to have trouble fixing those cars?
I don't think so. I don't think we're going to have trouble. We have to change.
Uh-huh.
But change is good.
We'll
learn.
You remember we went from points and condenser to electronic ignition. We were all scared to death. Then we went from conventional brakes to ABS. Then we went from an air conditioning system to a 12, then to a 134, and now we're at what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Correct.
And then we've gone from traction control and brake activated traction control, and now we understand wheel sensors. So I've never been afraid of the next thing because of what we've been through. We went through carburetors with electronic
feedback.
Yeah. And then we went to fuel injection, and we had first throttle body fuel injection, and then port fuel injection. The transition wasn't easy, but we look back now, and it's kind of...
And now it's direct injection.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. Speaking of direct injection, what we're talking about is we're going to inject the fuel not behind the intake valve, but right into the cylinder.
Right in the combustion chamber.
In the combustion chamber. There is a problem with that, right?
Pressures.
Well, and the carbon. Because, folks, we used to spray the fuel at the backside of the intake valve, which washed that oil into the cylinder with it. Now that we're not spraying the fuel in there, we got tremendous carbon problems. So you can see on YouTube and all those other great places where they drop a camera into the intake and, oh, gosh, the back of the intake valve is terrible. That's a problem.
Absolutely.
I don't know how we're going to fix that.
Well, it's just a routine cleaning.
Okay. So have you decided what equipment you're going to use for that?
We already do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are you using?
We're using a BG product.
Okay.
And
you're injecting it where?
Right into the intake at the throttle body.
The air intake.
Right.
Okay. So this chemical's going in, and it's passing the valve, and you're adding it to the air system, not the fuel system.
Right.
And it's cleaning that up.
Just like if it was a carburetor, we're washing that intake manifold. We're washing the backside of the valves.
Okay. Then with the are you able to see before and after?
We have the cameras that we can drop right down its throat. Yeah.
Okay. So there's been some concern that we're going to be rushing this trash down the exhaust, and is the cat going to be able to handle the solids and the dirty water, the dirty chemical through?
Well, the catalytic converter is getting that product anyway.
Okay.
As far as the carbon and the oils.
Right.
Yeah.
So all we've got is the chemical we're using.
Right.
Add to that. And I'm thinking if it's combustible, it's actually going to help keep the catalytic converter hot.
It'll help clean it out. Yeah.
Okay. And then we got Greg. Greg has water-based paint now.
Mm-hmm.
And before it was obviously enamel, and you did thinner and stuff?
It was solvent, yes.
Okay. And what's the difference there?
Well, it's, the solvents were easier to blend and repair when things were hurt.
And blend is get the color right.
Correct.
Right? Okay,
correct.
Good.
So, like, if it was something happened, something got into the paint and whatever, and we had to redo a panel, the solvent was more forgiving. Water, once you get used to using it, is actually an easier product to use, but it's not as forgiving when you have mistakes. But with everything we've done in our business as far as purification in the air, downdraft, climate-controlled, booth, heated, makes it to where the paint comes out so clean that you really don't have to ever do any... I mean, not never, but it's rare that you have to repaint the panel because any flaws that might have been so minor in the clear will be color sanded and polished out. End result is it looks better than factory usually.
Okay, so the door matches the fender.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, when you use a water-based paint, are you putting a clear coat over the top of the water-based paint?
Yes, and that's solvent.
Okay, that's a solvent base. Now, yes. I think you told me once that clear coat is nothing more than paint with no pigment.
Correct. Yeah, okay. It is. It's your ultraviolet screener. It protects your color.
Okay. All right. And then, do you have equipment for those that would be colorblind or wouldn't have a good sense of what purple's supposed to look like? Do you have something that helps you determine that?
Well, you have to have a painter with good color, good color eye. I mean, you can't be colorblind and or so forth. But we have a $10,000 camera that we use to match colors when we have cars in that are repainted or whatever, or we don't have a formula on it, or even when we do have a formula on it and we're struggling to match it, we'll use that to get us dialed in closer. But the end result is you just have to have a great painter that knows what he's doing, that knows all the, you have a formula. And so he takes that formula list and he adds to the formula as he's looking at his spray out panels, knowing what he needs to, needs to make it a little bit more brown, or he needs to make it a little bit more darker, a little more metallic to it. And so, but sometimes, because he's such a seasoned veteran, he knows what to do as far as going off the board. In other words, it may not be in the formula. He needs to add something else because the sun has changed the paint to be much different than what it was brand new out of the factory.
Okay. And that makes a lot of sense. My question after the break is where does he do his testing? On the panel that he's ultimately going to paint?
No. We have spray-out panels. They're about 4x6, and he actually saves all of his spray-outs for variances because we have a gentleman we're doing his 75 Firebird, and he stuck a lot of money in this car mechanically, and he wants a really nice paint job, but he wants the brand-new Chevrolet Silver. And so we said, well, which one? And he goes, well, the brand-new Chevrolet Silver. So my painter showed him there's 11 variances to that color, or whatever the number was. And so we sprayed them all out for him and let him pick the one he wanted.
Okay.
And he was amazed that he had to pick through 11 samples.
11 of silver.
Yeah.
11
and
samples
so
of silver.
And so that's what we're up against when we get vehicles in. There's different variances.
Okay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have two mechanical guys and one paint and body guy. So if you have any questions, we'll do our best to answer them. And if you don't like the answer, then don't call. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here for 2 hours, but if you would like to call us, we've got mechanical guys and painting and body guys here, so you're welcome to call us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you about a diesel shop, and it's called Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're off of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and Nate knows more about diesels than anybody I know. And he's a diehard diesel guy, but he works on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. So your big three-axle truck that hauls 80,000 pounds is not likely to be something that he wants to deal with. They also have a website for 24 hours a day that you can look at the performance stuff and look at some other stuff that you might want to enhance your diesel. So I know Nate, and I know you'll get good service. So if you have a diesel and nobody else can find it, fix the problem, Nate's a good guy at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Bob, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Morning, guys. You know, on that gasoline direct injection, are you going to get symptoms, or should you be doing that cleaning thing like as a maintenance thing?
Hey, Tommy, why don't you take that one?
Well, it's a maintenance.
It's a maintenance?
The problem with the... I shouldn't say the problem, but...
It sounds like his mic is off.
Okay. How about that one?
Am I there?
Oops, okay. Still quiet.
Hold on just a minute.
Oh. You lost.
Just talk. Keep talking.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Ready?
Go. All right.
Okay. So on direct injection, as with a lot of other functions of the automobile, the degradation is very slow. So as you're driving that car 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 miles, you're not noticing the loss of performance, the loss of fuel economy. Again, regular cleaning on it keeps things going, keeps it well, and keeps your fuel economy and performance going.
Okay, and there's some other, in an exaggerated way, you'll have extended cranking when it's hot because it acts like a sponge and sponges up the fuel. So, yeah, you're going to have some symptoms, but on a 1 to 10 scale, you're already at a 7 or an 8 or a 9.
And you really don't notice them because you got so accustomed to that being that way.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a good idea that you look at that as being something that's an option as long as you're hitting all the cylinders. And I don't think there's a code for that. I don't think
The computer makes adjustments.
Yeah.
So as the computer's making the adjustments, you're losing your fuel economy. But it is normal maintenance.
Okay.
And, you know, the funny thing is they come up with all this new gizmos and things to get good fuel economy. But then you have to pay for cleaning, which you typically didn't have to do on other injection systems. So where you're saving the money at the gas pump, you're spending it now at the maintenance.
The direct injections today doesn't look like it's a step forward to us. We're creating a problem, and we're not washing that oil off the back of the valve. And so we're creating carbon, something that we didn't have to deal with before. Right. I don't understand the benefit of direct injection other than the fact, and we're swirling the gas on the back of the valve, we're swirling the gas with air at the same time.
Right.
Or direct injection, we don't have that benefit.
Well, on the other side of it, we're running smaller engines, mm-hmm. more horsepower.
Yep.
You know, you think of a Camaro. Camaros have got 4-cylinder engines in them now. And they're better performing than they used to be. So,
you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. All righty.
We're making it lighter.
Bob, that work for you?
Yeah. Have you seen that walnut shell blasting that they do or something?
We do that quite a bit on BMWs. Yes.
And why BMWs?
Problematic.
Okay. All right. And are you're using the crushed walnut shells?
Correct.
And you're blowing them in, and we're cleaning up the back of the valve?
Right, and we're vacuuming them out right at the same time, cleaning that carbon.
Okay.
It does happen, and it's a problem, and it's I don't think we've had that issue with any Japanese, Asian, American car at this point. But certainly we've been doing it to BMWs quite a bit.
So you got to make sure the exhaust valve is closed. And the intake's closed, or both of them's closed when you're doing that?
Well, you certainly want to close them off, but the nice thing about the walnut shells is that it will make its way through the engine, and it's a lot safer for the engine or the metal components of the engine.
All right, it'll be on the intake side and the exhaust side, but it's not going to be in the oil side or the coolant side.
Correct.
There's no contamination there. Well, thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. Vicki, you're up next. How can we help you?
Thank you. I'm grateful for this opportunity to talk to a paint man. In April, I bought I'm the third owner of a 1969 C10. The first two owners lived in Prescott, and both of them kept it in a garage. The first owner, sometime before 1974, had a white truck painted appropriately, cream-colored, because it is a cream puff. My question, I've had it washed and waxed twice at a hand car wash and had Carnauba wax put over it. What can I do to maintain the paint in the best condition possible?
Well, if you can keep it garaged or out of the sun as much as possible, that's going to maintain it the best. As far as waxes, you know, hand washing is always the best. Car washes, they're a little hard on the paint, but, you know, just a good quality Meguiar's wax, once every couple months at the most, but maybe every 6 months. It just depends on how much you use the truck.
I drive it once a week to work.
Okay. So, yeah, if you can do a nice hand wax where you take your time, don't do it in the sun, once every 6 months is plenty. And just, you know, like I said, you keep it clean. Sounds like it's a really nice truck, and it'll stay that way forever, really, because you've got a real neutral color that doesn't normally go away too fast.
Oh, thank you. It was appraised at between very good and fine. I was very lucky to find the truck.
Well, good. Good, good, good. Does it have sentimental value? Something that you drove when a kid, or you had your first kiss in this truck, or your dad passed it on to you? I mean, there's always a story about this kind of stuff, but we don't want to get into the areas that's going to get me fired, right?
No, my parents have, from the time we went to the Seattle World's Fair in 1962, we had a C10 with a camper.
Okay.
And my first vehicle I drove was a 69 Impala. My first truck that I owned was a 1970 C10, which although I I'm good friends with the guy who bought that from me. I would never want it back because it was a three on the tree.
Okay.
And I'm grateful that this one's a four on the floor.
No problem. I have a question for you. If she takes it to work and she should park it in the shade, is that almost as good as in your garage? Just out of the sun?
Well, as long as it's out of the sun, yeah.
That's the big dog.
But the other part of it is make sure it's a tree that's not dripping.
Okay, all right. I was thinking about those metal carport stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty.
I have shaded parking at work, thank you.
Okay.
Nice.
Covered parking.
All right. Well, okay. Then you're all set.
Yeah. So the mulberry trees and those trees that drip and stuff, they're a bad idea. But just the concern was is sun versus environment.
Yes,
so
it's the ultraviolet rays that take out your paint.
All right. I think the guys that take car covers to work and cover their cars, I always want to see like a Lamborghini underneath that car cover. So you don't always see that.
1 minute.
Well, I think that putting car covers on at work, it can actually be hard on the paint because you're putting that same cover back on a car that's already got some dirt on it.
Okay.
So that's wearing away all day with the wind on your paint.
Okay. All right. I understand that. 602-508-0960. We have open lines. There's five of them. If you'd like to call, Gil is our engineer. So you say, good morning, Gil. And then you say, I'd like to be pushed to the front of the line. And Gil's going to say, certainly. So 602-508-0960 is his phone number, and then we'll get you on the air. So the question becomes mechanical guys, paint and body guys, and then I'm going to ask when we get back, we used to have Bondo. Do we still have Bondo, or is it plastic, or is it fiberglass, or that kind of stuff? What's the changes and what's the difference between a long time ago and today? So again, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is Tom from Action Auto and Greg from Phoenix Body Works. Tom's up at Deer Valley. He's the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. And Greg is a mile north of the 101, a mile east of the I-17.
On 19th Avenue.
On 19th Avenue. So I've known both of these guys for many, many, many years, and I just wrecked my truck, and I practice what I preach. So you're going to get it. And I'm going to tell my son that his idea of fixing it himself is a bad one.
Probably so.
Yeah. Especially when I hear that we got to weld the bedside on. And I already know we don't have anybody that can do anything but splatter a welding rod or a stick, or not a stick, but a wire feed.
Yeah, and for resale of your truck, when you do finally, you want it to look factory. You don't want it to look like somebody welded a bedside on.
Right, so. And you're right, you're right. Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Tom's first. Tom, good morning.
Morning. How you doing?
We're good. Thank you very much.
Good, good. We were talking about direct injection.
Uh-huh.
I've got a 2017 Accord, and it's got a 170-degree thermostat in it. I just have an aversion to these cooler temperatures. What's your opinion on those?
You should run it at 190 degrees. The extra heat that's in that engine will keep it cleaner.
I got a different opinion, just slightly different. From an oil perspective, water boils. Answer this, Tom. When does water boil?
212.
I was talking to the other Tom.
We got to have 212.
Okay. Too many times.
The oil guys say this. They say the reason why we had sludge in the 70s and the 80s, and we kind of got rid of sludge in the 90s, was because every time you shut it off, you make a tablespoon of water, and then you got to get the water up to 212 to get the PCV valve to suck it and send it up the tailpipe. So they're saying the 220, the 220 on your gauge is exactly where we want you to be, but it also enhances the ability for the fuel to vaporize and so forth and so on, and we don't drip fuel out of the injectors. So there's 190 is fine. But according to the oil guys, 220 is where they want you to run because your oil is going to perform much better at 220. And this, I was at ASU not too long ago, and I asked the class when water boils. Nobody raised their hand.
When it's on the stove for quite some time.
One guy comes back and he says 100, and I said that's Celsius. Convert it to two. you know, the other thing. But anyway, we had fun with that. But 212 is what Chevron and Valvoline and Phillips 66 and all those guys, Shell, I didn't say that, they all want you to run the temperature up, because if you don't, we turn the oil to mud, the water and the oil turns to mud, and then that creates its own set of problems. That do it?
Yeah, I got a follow-up question to that. Okay. I'm having a hard time finding a high temp. So I looked on the internet, and their high temp, their idea of high temp is going from 172 to 180, and it's not enough effect. How can I cross-reference that? Everybody seems to only want to sell you the, you know, the one that they quote think goes with it, and I want to get around that.
I would have to do a little research on that. I believe the factory thermostat is going to be at about 192, 195.
I'm going to bet $100 on that.
Yeah.
Ever since the early 2010s, we've seen nothing but 192, 195 thermostats. So, if you've got a problem, here's what you do. You got to feel that upper hose while it's warming up. If you get hot water or warm water through that upper hose, the thermostat's either not there or it's stuck open.
Two minutes.
So it's a situation where you can go to Google University, but I can tell you this much. Those guys don't work for me or Tom. They don't know what they're talking about. And half, three-quarters, 75, 95% of what you get off the internet is from somebody who's a butcher, a baker, or a candlestick maker. And you don't know anything better. So, you know, I don't know. How many years experience you got?
I'm only 20 years old.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So we tell our ages.
I gave up birthdays a long time ago.
Okay, well, I'm 39. We just crossed over 30. Well, my wife's 39. I've been working for her for 39 years. But, yeah, it's we're both on the same track, 195.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know what? We're going to take Jerry. Jerry, what can we do for you?
Hello. Excuse me. I've got an 09 Durango. I'm working on a window regulator and a rear passenger door.
1 minute.
Question is, the reason it's stuck in its down position.
Okay.
I've taken the switch out, I've got the door panel off, and I've powered the, if I hit the switch, the window motor flinches on its way down but will not flinch on its way up. I checked the plug coming to the rear seat, going to the motor, and I get power on both sides,
okay,
going up and going down.
Okay, you got movement up and down, though, but it just won't close, right? You got movement up and down, but it won't close or won't open all the way? Is that what it is?
No. I'm trying to determine if the motor on a regulator is bad.
Okay. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back to you. So you just stay right there, but I'm up against the tall break, and Gil is yelling nasty words in my ears. 602-508-0960. We're going to take care of Jerry, and then we got four lines open. You're welcome to call us. We'll be right back. Everybody, let's push all the buttons and make sure that we're not feeding back. Can you hear the difference between Mark making a mistake and not?
Does that ever happen?
No. I'm pretty mistake-free. You can just ask my wife, and I'm pretty mistake-free. And let me tell you real quick about Auto Dynamics. He's over in Sun City. He's been around a long time, and Chuck and I have been friends since 1968, 1970. Derek now runs the family operation. It's a really trusted source for complete automotive services in the Sun City area. So it's kind of an unusual situation, and our industry hasn't really agreed that this is best or not, but Derek has decided his staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill, so he can ensure that they're not going to sell unnecessary parts and repairs. So I'm keeping track of that as well as a lot of other guys. But nevertheless, Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue, is a place that I'd like to recommend. Jerry.
Yeah.
Okay. Tom, take it. The window.
Okay, the window. The motor goes up, the motor goes down, but it will not go up.
That is correct.
Sounds like you have a switching problem. Because
I disconnected the power going to the motor.
Okay.
I ran a multimeter, one side ground, one side to the switch, hit the switch, I got power. I did it on the other toggle, and I got power on both sides.
Okay, we're trying to fix the cars through your eyes, but we know we reversed the polarity. And the fact, and you wanted to know if it was a motor regulator, but the fact it moves at all says it's not the motor and the regulator. Have you tried this window operation from the master switch on the driver's door?
Yes, I haven't. I've got nothing.
Okay. Well,
give the motor a tap and see if it changes its mind.
Yeah, yeah. This is what you do. You have somebody.
I beat on it.
No, we're. Well, let's finish, okay? Hold on.
Okay.
You just have somebody, perhaps the car's running, somebody hold the switch in the position you want it to move. You go outside and whack the door with the palm of your hand, not enough to dent it, but to shake it up. And probably 50% of the time, things will change. But sometimes it's a motor and sometimes a switch, so you're still back in the same box you're in. Well, we reverse the polarity, and so if you say you have power through both sides, I think he's lost the ground. It's
right.
Possible.
Yeah, it sounds like a grounding issue.
Yeah,
but
this is something that needs to be diagnosed, but I don't know that I'd spend a lot of money guessing, because the chances of you a master switch is hundreds of dollars. And
it's probably more money than the regulator.
Yeah, that's right. So try what we're saying. Whack the outside of the door when somebody's holding the switch in the direction it doesn't go, which I think he said was up, and see. And
right.
If all of a sudden the motor goes up, then more than likely you have a switch problem. Okay?
Okay, well, it sounds like a switch problem because I already beat on it, and then I got nothing out of it. So.
Okay. Well, good luck, Jerry. Thank you very much. Kip, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yes, I have a F-250, 250,000 miles on it. About 2 months ago, I had the ABS light come on while I was on the freeway. Shut it off, and the light stayed off. About a month later, it did it again. About 3 weeks, it did it again.
Okay,
now it's
okay.
Doing it three times a week. It always goes off when I shut it off.
Of course, that's it's supposed to do that.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to light after the key's in your pocket. But first of all, I'm not going to say that you're not telling us the truth, but he may be the first Ford guy I've ever heard in the world that got to 250,000 miles.
Yeah. Well, tow trucks.
It's a lot of towing time.
I've got my brother who has the same truck and got 417,000 on it.
It is how you, if you take care of a vehicle, it will take care of you.
And I'm going to take the other side of the coin. Fibbin runs in his family.
Yeah, okay.
I'm teasing you. I'm just teasing you.
Look, I know Snow White, so I can say she does have a few things that would say, no, he's not telling the truth.
Yeah. You know what? She's my human lie detector. So I'll admit that.
This is a four-wheel drive.
This is a four-wheel drive?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Pattern failure, from what we see, the hubs are starting to get worn in the front. Now I'm not telling you to go replace anything. You need to have it checked.
And well, here's what you can do. If the hubs are wrong, then you find some church parking lot and you make some abrupt lefts and rights turn with the light off. And if we start getting that hub to wobble, oftentimes you'll get the ABS light on.
Right.
Another thing you can do is go out to the church parking lot when it's not full and just do some really hard right turns in a circle. Then go drive it. No light. Then go to the left turn circle, and then the light comes on. Well, there's a difference in speed when you're doing tight circles. Anyway,
yes.
But in the reality, we're going to plug our scanner in and go drive the thing and see which one of them is dropping the speed. You can't do that because you don't have a scanner. So, Tom, give me an
oscilloscope. I'm sorry?
Tom, diagnostic fee. Between what and what?
Running tests on that car, you'd be anywhere from $80 to a couple hundred dollars.
I agree. It's just a matter of when you find it.
Right.
So if you're going through all kinds of stuff, but you have to know that there's nothing going to go. When the ABS light's on, you just don't have anti-lock brakes, but you're not going to lose all your brakes. So it's really a matter of the best thing that could happen is it fails altogether and the light stays on all the time.
Yeah. Anti-lock brakes is taking the brakes away.
Yes.
Okay.
So when the light comes on, you have brakes. You just don't have that anti-skid.
Yeah. So
I use Thompson's, and I've always enjoyed Thompson's.
Thank you.
Your list of cars are great. I've seen some of our transmission people come and go, and I'm like, oh, boy, I've never done anything to the transmission either. So
I think you've never had the transmission open. It's not been flushed or the filter.
I've had it flushed twice.
Okay. All right. I'm of the opinion that you have the filter done once and then 60, 90,000 miles, you do a flush. And you bounce back and forth because I think you'll agree we want to look in the pan. We don't want any snap rings in the bottom
right.
of the pan. And
right.
we want to see clutch material that others might think, oh, this is bad. But in reality, the clutch material is normal. So if you've had it flushed a couple of times and you've got success, what's the expected life of the transmission in the F-250 or in any truck, four-wheel drive truck? What do you think? Expected life average?
100 and a half.
And me too. I'm with you. 100 and a half to 200.
It depends on how you take care of it.
Well, and he's got 250,000 miles on it.
Temperatures that are running at.
And his wife's probably driving it, and he's lying about who drives it.
Yeah, a lot of variables.
He never drives it.
Okay. I'm just teasing you. All righty, Brian. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. And certainly, if you live near Thompson's, I would give him a try. You got a couple of choices. You can wait till it gets worse and the light comes on sooner and stays on longer. Or you can go get it fixed. And if it's intermittent and it doesn't happen when we drive it, it's kind of hard to determine which corner the problem's at. So, anyway, thanks, Brian. And, Gil, do we have anybody else?
Actually, that was Kip. Brian is
next. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That was Kip. And Brian, we're ready to help you.
Okay. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got an 06 Tundra. And at 120,000 miles, the dealer did a differential, the rear differential service. And he did it with the OEM fluid. So 1,000 miles later, which would have been 2 months later, I go to my shop and I tell him, it feels like I'm driving on marble. He took it around. He took it around the block. He felt the vibration, jacked it up, and he put Equitorque in it.
Okay.
Daylube Equitorque. And it disappeared. So now, a year later, I'm at 130,000 miles, and it feels like I'm driving on cobblestone. So my question is, do I just keep adding more Equitorque? Do I have another service done?
Okay, you take the Equitorque thing, but I'm going to comment first. First of all, there's only four companies that make oil. So I don't care about whether it's Tundra or it's whatever kind of fluid it is. Every 1030, every 520, every 1540 virtually has the same compound, but it's in a different bottle. But you can talk about the Equitorque.
And those come out of a different hole? They come out of the same bottle?
No.
The earth?
No. Yeah, exactly.
Back to the fluid. That Equitorque is a limited slip additive.
It's got the little sticker.
Right, because it's got a clutch pack inside the differential. My thought on this is the differential pan should be opened up and reinspected.
The cover. Yeah, we need to pull the cover.
You want to make sure there's no metal coming there, because there's axle bearings, there's side carrier bearings, there's pinion bearings that could be coming apart.
And that would affect the fluid.
Well, that's kind of my concern. I'm doing more damage to the thing.
That's why you should open it up and get a look at it. And then make a determination
but,
of where we're going.
All right. But not everybody can look at the magnet, if there is a magnet in there, and tell you whether that's normal for your 120,000 miles or not. So thus, us gray-haired guys have seen this before, but your limited slip differential matches your symptoms.
And you know, when people say they're driving on cobblestones, that could be the tires coming apart also.
It could be some other things.
No, they're fine.
Yeah.
So. I mean, well, what other things, Mark?
Yeah. Well, I think we need to diagnose it, because you've given us a couple of different kinds of symptoms. And the limited slip differential with the wrong fluid or without the additive typically drags a tire on a hard right turn or a hard left turn.
And you get chatter.
And you chatter. But when you're talking about driving on cobblestones and you're driving straight ahead, we're not talking about activating the limited slip differential, both tires, unless, of course, he's got a tire that has a different diameter or a different size than the other tire, and that would be something that we would look at, and that's something you need to look at. So that's how I would handle it.
The odd thing is, it doesn't happen when I back out of the driveway, but it only happens for the first 20, 30, 40 feet. As I'm going, and then I think the fluids kind of take effect and lubricate everything.
Okay, well, you're asking a question that can only be fixed after we fix it, or can answer after we fix it. So, you know what? Why not just change the fluid again?
Yeah, get an inspection on it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Well, because the gasket's 10,000 miles. I mean, is that still a good gasket?
Well, it just depends. We have to look at it. If they over-tighten the cover and you got the cover that's got a big dent in it and the gasket's flattened around the hole, then we're probably going to want to do that. What? What are you laughing at?
Gasket's $3.
I agree with you. I agree. Is it $3 at your place? I think it's like $42.95 at mine.
Yeah, well, you use a different gasket.
I just wrote that down.
Yeah, he's got $3 gaskets. And what's the labor to do that?
Oh, that's... It all depends.
Okay, and it's got a rear cover on it, yes? Yes, it's got a rear cover on it.
Or is it a removable pump?
Me?
Exactly. Yes, you, Brian, is it got a cover on the back of it?
Yeah.
Okay, we're just wondering, if there's no cover out there, it's a little more difficult to get into there. So that's why we ask you. But anyway, thank you, Brian. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And the air gun means we got another caller. Who is it, Gil?
That would be John.
John, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I have a 08 HHR panel that in the last couple of weeks has started to end up with gas fumes in the cab after I fill it up. Mm-hmm. Once it goes down, you know, a quarter, eighth or a quarter, then it disappears. Only seems to do it when it, and it's getting progressively worse.
What do you think, Tom?
And no check engine light?
No.
Well, certainly the way the fuel tank breathes, there's going to be, hopefully there's something there. There could be a leaky injector, but again, it's... something that needs some another inspection on it.
It's kind of hard to diagnose those specific symptoms because it can be
off the smell.
Yeah, because we're going off the smell. So, I mean, the question is it under the hood? Is it under on top of the fuel tank and everything in between? Have we lost one of the vapor lines off of the evap system? There's just all kinds of stuff. But it would help if you could identify if it's under the hood or at the back of the vehicle. Now, also, I want you to pay attention when you fill it up. I want you to shut it off at one click. And do you normally stuff the tank?
No, I just let it run till it clicks off, and that's
okay.
That.
All righty. So if you stuff the tank, I had a guy last week admit to stuffing the tank. He admitted it. And so I was going to give him a free oil change, but he hung up first. Nevertheless, when we get back, we'll kind of brainstorm that between us. So if you stay right there, John, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join and ask a question, you're more than welcome. And right now is a good time to call, but we're going to be back for another hour. So if you miss this time, then you can call back, 602-508-0960. We've got Tom from Action Auto. And then we've got Greg from Phoenix Body Works, and he's kind of feeling lonesome here. So if you have a paint question or what's clear coat really mean and how do you know when your car is really appropriately fixed after an accident, then Greg can help you with that. 602-508-0960. He's not working. Oh, because I haven't pushed the button yet. Nevertheless, Tom from Action Auto, Greg from Phoenix Body Works is here at my guests, and so you have three heads, and sometimes it's better than just one or two. So if you want to give us a call, 602-508-0960. There's four lines open, 602-508-0960, and we had a customer just a caller a few minutes ago talk about Thompson's. Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that's been able to pass the tests that we insist our shops on their best car repair shops list. They make that grade. Thompson's have been around for a long time. As a matter of fact, the last name of Thompson and the last name of Vivian, which Brian and Thelma represent Thompson's, those two families have been in Mesa for probably since 1960s, maybe the early 70s. But they've been around a long time, so these kids are good. And I don't mean to call them kids, but Brian and Thelma, once you meet one of them, you'll understand why I'm telling you if you live in Mesa, then Thompson's Auto Repair, it's on Main Street just east of Stapley, is a great place to go. John's got an HHR, and he's smelling gas. So go ahead and look in your magic wand and your magic ball and tell us what it is.
Oh, no idea. It appears on the surface that as you're filling the car, the charcoal canister is accepting that vapor, and it's releasing it, and that's what you're smelling.
And what we're doing is we're sucking the fumes off the top of the engine, and hopefully we don't get any liquid, and it's going to go through the canister, and then it's going to go back into the engine and go out the tailpipe. That's what we're doing. We're sucking the fumes off there. So there's a lot of possibilities, but if you could find the canister, you can sniff the canister, and oftentimes you'll be able to smell that it's covered with gas. Not covered, but full of gas. But for us, sometimes it's a matter of disconnecting some lines and looking inside right. with a flashlight.
Unbolt it and see how heavy it is.
But he's not going to have anything to compare it to.
Right, right.
But see, we senior guys with gray hair, we have a scale between our two hands. So it's just a matter of us touching it and right. then closing our eyes, and then we know exactly what's the matter with
it. But there is a rubber diaphragm in that canister. And if that diaphragm is split, it could allow the vapors to escape.
And does the smell of gas ever go away if you were to drive it for 2 hours?
No, not so much. Only from air circulation if you have the windows down.
Okay. Now,
it only diminishes when the level of the tank goes down.
Okay. And so it disappears at that point.
Sorry?
It disappears at that point.
Yes.
Okay.
It only does it for a while after it's first filled. Once it gets down,
yeah, it sounds like that.
That first stage of a tank is gone, or so it diminishes greatly.
Okay. Yeah. It's time to inspect the hoses, inspect the canister.
And we also could have a variety of switches that are going to open and close the canister, and so if we have vacuum to it, and we're not supposed to, we can have a problem, or the reverse. If we don't have vacuum to it when we're supposed to, then we're going to open and close that circuit sometimes with vacuum. That's the reason
why.
That's
why I was asking for a check engine light.
Yeah, and you're right. That would typically cause a lean condition, and we'd have a check engine light. That's a good example of what I always say. We got a check engine light with a lean condition. You go to that three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store. He looks at it and says, oh, you need all your O2 sensors. So there's four of them on your car. So let's just charge $400. You install them all, and the chances of you getting the pre and post on driver's side one, bank one, and bank two are one in four. So at the end of the day, you still have the light on, and you're not even mad at the kid who just spent $400 right. guessing. Because he's looking at the code. So in your particular hypothesis, we have a vacuum leak at the canister, and it's causing a lean condition, and it has nothing to do with the O2.
Yeah, you got to think of that check engine light as a messenger, and that messenger will tell you something.
And then
it's up to the guy to interpret what that message is.
And I use slightly different. I got this from somebody else. It tells you the problems in Ohio. You got to find the city and the street and the house number and the zip code. And so all it tells you is it's in Ohio or Florida, and you still got to track it down. And what we're up against is all the people on the Internet, Google this and Google that, and this guy's an expert. This is what I say, and this is not very nice. If he was as good as he thinks he is, and he's diagnosing your car over the Internet, which you and I can't do, and especially without conversation, then he'd be working for me for $50,000 to $100,000 a year. He certainly wouldn't be on the Internet telling people how to fix their John Deere lawnmower.
And he could work from home.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys at the paint and body side that work from home, don't they?
Some of them do, yes.
Yeah. And so how do you handle spraying paint in your backyard? You just wet the grass?
No, you don't do it in your backyard. You do it in your carport.
Oh.
You do it early in the morning right when the sun comes up and the bugs are still sleeping.
Oh, okay. And you spray over the bugs and then they're there forever?
Well, no. They're sleeping. They're not on your car.
Oh.
You just tacked it off.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that the bugs are there, so you get out your blower and blow the bugs off and then paint your car.
No. The bugs aren't there because you tacked it off. The bugs were sleeping. They're not coming back.
Okay. And tacked it off. You have to explain that now.
Well, it's a rag with a little bit of like wax in it, and
okay.
it'll grab all the fine dirt and dust off the finish of the car before you put paint on it.
So it's
pure.
Okay. Like liquid pledge?
No, not at all.
Nope.
Tom will be looking for trouble there.
We're just gigging you. We're just gigging.
We know this.
Okay. So basically, it's a tack rag that just removes all the impurities before you paint it.
Yes. All
by
the,
wiping
any
it.
Fine dust or anything that might be on the surface.
It's like a diaper with a cleaning your glass.
Kinda. Well, you would get fibers from
okay.
it.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. All right. You're going to make it tough on us. All right. Who's next?
We have Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question for the body man, the paint man.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I've got a 2014 Mustang. It's silver. And I've got water stains from the sprinklers. I've got some deposits on the left side of the car. I'd like to clean them off, but I don't want to get too aggressive and take the clear coat off or damage the finish. If you have any suggestions.
I think I know the answer to this one. Vinegar and water.
That's probably correct.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. Vinegar and water is going to be the first place I'd start.
I was just guessing. I was just thinking you were going to slap me.
And then if you can't get it off, you know, we can get them off with a mild polish,
okay.
Usually.
So you're going to wash it and then use some polish. And is it like a big buffer with a big pad on it?
It's a foam pad, and normally you don't have to get too aggressive. And sometimes you just almost have to color sand, which is a real fine paper, and water to get something really set in off. But normally you can get it off. Like sometimes we'll have a car that comes in with swamp cooler. People have evaporative coolers in their garages or whatever, and it leaked on it or whatever, or it was at a shop.
Mm-hmm.
And we start with vinegar and water, and we have some other products that we work with to get rid of the water spots. But the vinegar and water is where you start, and then you know, a foam pad with a fine polish
on a buffer,
yes,
on an electric buffer.
Yeah, the Orbital,
okay,
is easy for the person off the street to use.
Okay,
to where you don't burn the paint.
Okay, and when you use a light sandpaper, it's lighter than a fingernail file that the women use for their...
Well, it's like 2,000 grit.
Okay. But they don't know what 2,000 grit is.
Well, it's super fine paper.
Okay.
And that just takes a little bit off the top to get rid of that water spot. And then we have to use compounds with a buffer and then work our way down to the foam and the polish to make it a perfected finish again.
Okay.
And seal the paint back up so it, you know, it doesn't go bad on you.
So that's a worst case scenario.
Yes.
Worst case scenario, we're going to have to sand it and then buff it.
Yes.
And is it like more than $20 or something like that?
Well, you're probably going to get maybe $400 into that.
I'm just trying to give you a trouble.
It's hard to say depending on the time. We just charge for what we get into it.
Okay. All righty, Tom, does that take care? Oh, one last thing. What's the composition between the vinegar and water? Is it like 50-50 or 75-30?
Yeah, you could go about 50-50.
Okay, and that's not going to hurt it.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. All righty, Tom, that do it for you?
It does. I appreciate the help. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And don't pay any attention to what I say about paint and body, because I'm just, you know, I'm just guessing. So
I
that's
think they
it.
Know that.
I know. Everybody knows that. All righty, 602-508-0960, and we have another caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Cusser.
Cusser, what can we do for you?
Cusser.
Hello, guys. I've got a 1988 Mazda B2200 truck, and it runs great, except it does smoke. It smokes for like the first 3 miles, like till it gets warmed up some. It's not using any coolant. It does use oil, so seems like it's oil burning. I did compression check, and the first three cylinders were 150, and number four was 170, and that's the one that gets fouled. So I guess my question is, it's like 220,000 miles, and about 50,000 miles ago, I did have the cylinder head redone, and I put new pistons, new piston rings, and new connecting rod bearings.
Okay, let's just deal with the oil issue, because obviously yep. Whatever happened is in the past. Tom?
Well, if it's blue oil coming out of the, or I'm sorry, blue smoke coming out of the tailpipe, that's an indication of oil.
And the question is that the question that you haven't answered, Cusser, is it from the rings or the valve guides?
Correct.
And that's
exactly.
The two places.
Yes.
Okay, so you have to do some testing for that and figure out which one it is. And if it's valve guys, it's related to the head. And sometimes you can put seals on it without pulling the head, as long as you air up the cylinders and know what you're doing. On the other hand, if it's rings, then you do a wet-dry compression test, and that'll tell you real quick. So those are the two options that you have. But I got to take a break, and thank you, Cusser, for that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. After the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem here every Saturday. We're talking about cars and car repair and all kinds of stuff. With me today is Tom from Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. You know, we've known one another since 1983. Did you know that?
It's been a while.
Okay. Do you remember where we met?
Well, no, because no.
Okay. You were one of the techs for that new smart scope that John had.
Yeah.
And I was buying the Bear. And we met then.
Yeah.
And I always admired your ability to get past all of the parameters that those two pieces of scope gave us. So we plug your car into the scope, and the scope tells you what's the matter. Was that ever true?
You know what that scope did? Is it gave a technician a routine.
Yes.
That's what those things were great for. It started at A, and it took them all the way to the end. And so many technicians just jump past all the other stuff. But that's what that machine did.
Now, at the end of the day, it might give you one or two possibilities, but it was more right than wrong.
Correct.
But it took a long time to go through the process.
It covered the bases.
Yeah. So, no, you're right. But it created the perception to the customer was, put it on the scope and call me.
Right.
And it was like the scope's going to look at the car and say, oh, Mark, you need to clean up the scoculator valve and
And then the technician had to determine what the machine was telling him.
Right, but that's not the perception the customer had, and that's not oftentimes what happened.
Yeah, the crystal ball, magic wand, we're still looking for one of those.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you a real quick story, and then we're going to get to the callers. The other day, the kids were complaining about front counter stuff. So I bought two fire hats in Amazon, and I bought two magic wands. You push the button, and it goes ding, ding. So I put one in the front counter of the two service stations. So a friend of mine, Bill, came in, and he started talking about his Volvo and stuff. And so Andy opens up the bottom cabinet, puts on her fireman's hat, and she pulls her thing over. She waves it over his face, and she slides his keys back to him. She says, it's fixed. And she says, I thought he was going to wet his pants laughing. And he goes, can I borrow that magic wand? She says, no, you can't. All right, let's go to the calls. Skip, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yeah, last year I did a little bit of deer hunting out of season. And I got the deer, but the deer got my front bumper. And I had a new bumper put on and repainted, and everything really looked nice. But it seems like the finish doesn't seem to hold up as well as what it did from the factory.
Well, it wasn't done by.
Why?
Yeah, it wasn't done by Greg at Phoenix Body Works. What did somebody do wrong?
Yeah. It was in another state, so I can't blame anybody locally.
All right, Greg.
Well, is it that it's chipping or is dying out the paint or
gloss?
If it just gets hit just a little bit,
it's chipping.
Scrapes it down and it, looks bad.
Did he put a new bumper on?
Yes.
Okay, so in the process of doing, it's a rubber bumper apparently. Plastic bumper. Yeah.
Plastic.
Yeah, they may not have used the proper products, because when you're dealing with plastic, you have sealers that are developed and designed just for that plastic bumper, and then the paint has a flex additive we put into it, and the same thing with the clear coat, so that it holds up as close as it can to factory. So it sounds to me like they didn't use flex agents or the proper sealer to make that paint bond to the bumper properly.
And so what's the fix?
Well, the bumper would have to be stripped, and sometimes it's almost cheaper, to, depending on the car, to just buy another bumper and start over.
Now, does the other bumper come with, like, primer and stuff where you paint it and seal it?
Some bumpers come with primer, but most of them are coming in raw plastic.
Okay.
And then that's why it's so important to use the right products to get it to bond to it.
So as low as and as high as, approximately? No one's going to hold you to it?
Yeah, it's probably about... Because you have to get that old paint off, you're maybe in the area of $600 if we just take it off and redo it to $800, and it could be almost the same to just put a bumper on.
Okay.
So
you have
see it. You have to see it and know the car, and then we can determine what's most cost effective for you.
Does that work, Skip?
It works good. I just needed some ideas. So anyway, thanks. Enjoy the program. Keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Al, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hey, guys. I got a body question. I have a 13 Wrangler, and a rock hit the windshield on the upper edge, and it chipped the paint right above where the windshield meets the cab of the truck. And there's a ding there that's gotten some rust on it. It's been there for a little while that I never took care of, and I need to get it taken care of. All said and told, it's probably... By the time it gets feathered back and such, I would think it's going to be about the size of a dime, maybe a little bit larger. But I don't know anything about paint. So I don't know if going down to the dealership and getting those kits they have is really worth it, or if I need to take it. I want it to be nice. So I don't know what something like that would cost to get, to get fixed.
I think what he's talking about on the dealer is he's going to get a fingernail polish matching paint. And
yes.
But go ahead and answer the question.
Right. You could take a there's different. So what you have is a chip, and the chip is rusting?
Yes.
Okay. So you could get we have an acid that just takes the rust off. Wouldn't hurt to paint it all and so forth. Then you can buy it at paint stores, paint supply stores.
Okay.
And then you could... either get the touch-up from the dealer or go to a body shop and ask them to mix up enough and brush touch it for you. And then with brush touching, after that base is put on, if it's a base coat, clear coat, we'll put a little clear on it. And from a distance, it'll be fine. But you will know it's there if you look for it.
Sure.
The other part of it, if you want it nice, where you can't tell, then it's going to have to be feathered back and primed. And like you said, after it's all said and done, you're a couple inches. Well, then you have to paint the whole roof. You have to blend the color a little bit, but you have to prepare the whole roof and clear the whole roof. We'll only put a little bit of color in the area that needs the repair. And, it depends on the vehicle as far as pricing goes on that. It could be as much as $1,200. It could be $500. It all depends on the vehicle.
Okay, would the insurance cover that rock chip and the subsequent repair?
Yeah, they'll cover that damage under comprehensive.
Okay. And one of the insurance guys, I'm not going to tell you who it was, they covered a thing that I thought was out. I mean, I was amazed. And I said, you covered this? And he says, yeah, we insure stupid. And I thought that was a great line. Not that anybody of their customers is stupid, but we make stupid decisions that cause it. Not in his case, because the rock chip doesn't have anything to do with it. But when you roll your Jeep over up out in the desert, kind of being stupid, and they insure stupid. So, anyway, well, thank you very much, Al. Thank you for that.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. And, Mark, we're going to get your question and probably get you on the other side of the break, so go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I got a 2001 Ford Ranger. It's got a 3-liter motor in it. It's got a miss that only shows up when it's first started. As soon as I take off and get under power, that miss appears to go away. And at idle, it'll be fine. But if I shut it off, it immediately comes back until I get under power again.
Okay, let me ask you a real quick question.
I'm plugging wires, but...
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Are you using any coolant at all? Are you adding coolant to the overflow on a regular basis or anything like
that? Not at all.
Okay.
No.
Go. Oh, I tell you what, let me hold you just a minute, Tom, and we'll get you on the other side of the break. Let me tell you real quick about Blackwell Auto at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I have known one another for a very long time. He's kind of an obstinate son of a gun. He has a warped sense of humor, but he can kind of fix cars. So if you go, if you're anywhere in the northeast Scottsdale area, northeast Phoenix area, he's the only shop in that part of town that I could send you to. He's a good mechanical shop. So it's Blackwell Auto, 40th Street and Greenway. His name is Tom, and that's who I would go to if I had a problem or send my mother. 602-508-0960. About when we took the break, I said, do you have an answer for him? And you said, yes.
Yeah.
And what was that? I'm going to get you in trouble.
No. Yeah, I said the fix is buy a Chevrolet. But let's get back to the Ford problem. A misfire is the cylinder's not firing, which is why you're feeling the shake. You're either going to be losing fuel or you're going to be losing electricity.
Or too much air.
Or compression, which is not going to come and go.
Right.
Yeah. So when an engine's cold, it needs additional fuel to run correctly. That's what chokes were for when we had carburetors. So it seems like whoever gets this vehicle or whoever wants to test this vehicle, they should get it when it's cold. They should have an alternative fuel source, propane. Start it up and add a little propane to it. If it smooths out, you know you're not getting enough gasoline in one of the cylinders.
And if it runs, after it warms up, it runs fine, then we can assume it's not a fuel pressure problem, and we can assume it may have something and probably does have something to do with the injector.
There are certainly several tests that need to be performed to isolate it, but again,
the
most
temperature common. Of the engine, the temperature of the engine makes no difference on this happen. The engine could be completely warm, and if I shut it off, it'll do it right away.
Oh. Okay.
And
so
no black smoke.
It doesn't matter if it's hot or cold.
Okay, and there's no black smoke. You don't ever see any black smoke coming out of the tailpipe.
No, never have. No.
Okay. Well, a lot of that will be answered once you identify what it is. But like he says, rich, lean, compression.
Electricity.
Electricity. So you've got a variety of things. If you want to try it, then switch the spark plugs from cylinder to cylinder and see if the problem moves with the spark plug. You can if
yeah,
it's got
I just
a
recently replaced all the plugs and wires.
Okay.
I was wondering if a coil could
certainly certainly and we do see those coil packs on those 3 liters and 4 liters fail.
So yeah, it's distributor
it
ignition.
Be an intermittent problem like that.
Well, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, and you think he's going to get a code on the backside of the on that?
If you remember, those Fords had a terrible mapping problem.
Okay.
Where they would have all kinds of problems and they would never set a code.
Okay. So yeah, you're not going to be able
code.
To look at that.
I'll throw a code. The code will come up and then I'll drive it for a day or two. It goes away and then it comes back a couple days later. This has been going on for over a year.
Okay. Well, that when that light comes on, it gives you an indication of where to start.
What cylinder is it showing on the code?
It'll show cylinder one misfire.
Okay. Cylinder one, okay.
So move the wire from, one and the one next to it, three. Swap the wires. That doesn't work. Swap the coils. That doesn't work. Swap the spark plugs and see if the problem moves. If you want to do it yourself, that's what you could do.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, it's a single coil pack, so I guess that would be my next move.
Okay. Well, you can still switch the wire and the spark plug, and that'll help you because that's two of the three possibilities. All righty?
Yeah, which I've replaced those. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Matt, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning. I just wanted to say I had a good experience at Blackwell. I went in for a repair recently, but my question today is kind of a body question.
Okay.
I bought a 2016 Scion TC, and they had a little package they put on it. Ground effects kind of is the only way I can think of to describe it. It kind of goes on the bottom of the front bumper and the bottom of the back.
Okay, or an air dam, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And over the 3 years, the panels, the fenders seem to be pulling away, and I kind of suspect that it might be. Maybe they didn't engineer that extra stress from the air the kit they put on. Does that make sense?
Uh, Are you sure that it's just not catching things when you park it or when you back up?
I did learn that early on the front, but it seems to happen on the back bumper, too. The back bumper's kind of, the lines just aren't even, the spacing.
Yeah, you would need to just stop at, you know, a body shop and let them look at it, and it may be that the retainers they used for it are fatiguing, they're kind of stretching, whatever, causing it to come somewhat loose. If you feel like you've never, you know, backed over something and caught it and caused it to be pulled on.
Is the retainers on those sometimes plastic?
Sometimes
rivets?
They're plastic. Sometimes they're a plastic retainer that has a insert in it.
Okay.
And so they normally are a very quick release type of retainer.
Okay.
And so, you know, it might be you just stop in and we just put new retainers on.
But it's something that you guys can look at, a good body shop can look at, and come to a conclusion within 10 minutes.
Yeah, in a minute.
Giving you a break.
Okay. Well, we can get it done in less than 10 minutes, yes.
You can look at it.
More than likely, we have what it takes to just fasten it for you, and you're back on your way. On little stuff like that, we just do it right away.
Okay. All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much for that, Matt. Thank you. So how much work do you do for free?
Well, that I didn't say that was free.
I'm kidding you.
Ten cents a retainer, so it's probably a buck.
Okay. All right. But the real answer is a professional is going to be able to tell you what's wrong with it really quick.
Yeah.
He's seen it before.
Yeah.
He's created it before. We learn from our mistakes, all that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Before you take it away from me, let me talk about Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th and Washington. He's been around a long time, since 1968, on the north side of the road, 40th Street in Washington. So if you travel up and down Washington or Jefferson, you're going to see, just Washington, I should say, you're going to see Automatic Transmission Exchange, what we call ATE. Phil's been around a long time. His staff are transmission diagnosis experts, and he says everybody perceives that a transmission problem necessitates a complete overhaul. And he goes, that's just simply not the truth, especially in the new transmissions of today. He's the only shop in the Phoenix area that I recommend for automatic transmission repair. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and let me tell you real quick about Kurt's Auto Repair, which is just down the street from you at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Kurt's is with Jeff and Eric, and those two guys are ASE Masters along with Kurt. They do a good job, and more than once, like Tom at Action, they have bailed me out. You see, I can't be everywhere all the time, but if I say to them, where do you live, and they live near Kurt's, I send them to Kurt's, and oftentimes he makes me look like a hero. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell, Kurt's is a good place. Kurt's Automotive, northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Let's go to the phone. Sim, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing? Let's see. You were almost answering a question I was thinking of. It was when the last caller that had a misfire.
Uh-huh.
And you said, was there water? You know, were you adding a little water?
Yep.
It's my son's truck. He went on a dirt road, then he took a wrong turn and took heavy bumps.
Okay.
And suddenly it stopped getting power. And so I got it home and I fooled with everything of why it idled fine. And it had the reading of misfire in one and then multiple cylinders.
Okay.
So I went through everything, injectors and stuff, and then I figured out I took off the exhaust pipes from the catalytic converter. You know, I took the whole thing off,
right.
And now it revs up fine. So obviously the exhaust system got clogged up. But when I lifted the truck, water came out of the muffler.
Okay.
So to me, it sounds like maybe we're getting water, possibly?
No, you're
getting... Or what were you think? What were you talking about?
Well, if he has a blown head gasket, then as it sits, the water's going to go into the cylinder. When you start it up, you're going to have a misfire until we clear the water out. Forget the water, okay? It has nothing to do with the water. The reason why you have water is because you don't have a cat that's boiling the water and turning it into steam. Is there any physical damage to the exhaust system? Physical, any of the pipe been hit or rock or anything? Okay.
No, well, no, not at all.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you how to diagnose it. Drill a hole in front of the catalytic converter with a quarter-inch bit and drill a hole behind the catalytic converter with a quarter-inch bit. Have him sit in the car. Make sure he loves you. Set the parking brake. Hold it up to 2,000 RPM. Stick your hands within 5 inches of those two holes, and you'll figure it out.
Okay. And that would be if it's clogged.
Yeah, but I mean, you said you took the exhaust off and everything was fine.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I took it off at the end of the manifold, exhaust manifold.
Yeah.
And now it revs up. Before it wouldn't even rev up past 1500 RPM. Okay. It would just idle, and then it would bog out like it was starving for gas. But it wasn't letting the exhaust out of the system.
Well, and then we have to know if there's physical damage because you said he was out boondocking it. So that's why I asked you about physical damage. But then if you took it apart and it runs fine, then it's got to be a cat that's blocked up. When was the last time you saw a muffler cause any kind of a problem with an exhaust plugage?
It's very rare.
Very rare. So it's much more catalytic converter. Now, you can go down to Harbor Freight and buy yourself a temperature gun, drive it the best you can for a mile or so, gun the front of the cat, gun the back of the cat, and see if there's a difference in temperature. Because if the cat's lit, the backside's going to be hotter than the front side. So if there is no temperature change, it's a good guess for it to be a catalytic converter. But if you just drill two holes in it, you'll know in a heartbeat. Because if the front hole comes out like a fire hose and the back, the hole in the back of the catalytic converter won't blow a match out, then you're done.
Okay. Now, question, could water cause the cloggage? If water gets through.
Well, that's condensation coming out of the exhaust.
Yeah, it's not. Okay. Water's going to turn as it goes through the cat, which is like, think of the catalytic converter as the grill you use to do steaks. We got this red hot stuff below it. The thing that causes catalytic converters is an abundance of oil consumption and real rich engines. They just cause the cat to melt down. So, how many miles are on this thing?
It's a Dodge Ram 98, about 160.
Okay, yeah, but it's a 98.
And it's 5.9.
Well, and Dodge has a problem with catalytic converters on those.
It's not a secret. So there is, it wouldn't be called a pattern failure because it's not on a majority of the vehicles, but it's certainly something that we see. All righty, Thim.
Yeah, my big thing is how do you know if a head gasket got blown? Is there any, or that you're leaking through a head gasket?
You're not giving us any symptoms that says that.
Well, there's the litmus test you can do to the coolant to see if any exhaust is showing up into the coolant. But, again, that's a shop that would run that test for you.
And you don't have anything. You've already answered the question.
Yeah.
You said it doesn't have any power, and I took the exhaust off, and it's got power. There's nothing up front of that manifold that's going to cause this problem. You know, it's just there's nothing. So don't go off on a tangent. Because you're gonna waste a lot of money and time. So we've given you the best advice we can give you, which is exactly what we kind of do. Thanks, Sim. Let's go to the next caller. Who we got, Gil?
That would be Jerry.
Jerry, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling you back about my regulator and let you know that you guys were absolutely right about the switch. I beat on the switch for a little bit, jerked it up and down, and it worked.
Okay, hold on just a minute. Tom, what is your diagnostic fee?
I work for free.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I work for $10.57, so here's the deal. The next time the plate passes you, you'll put $10.57 in it, and then look up at the Lord and say, take care of Mark, because I need all the help I can get. But
Mark's good for me.
Yeah. And you know what? Thank you for calling us back, because we really don't know. And we're giving you the best advice we can, and I think more importantly, we're telling you what we would do first.
Correct.
And so and you followed our directions, which most guys don't do. They'll call us back and say, I honked the horn and it blows, and so it can't be what you said it is. But thank you for calling and let us know. You made my day. Anyway, 602-50, we got somebody else. Who would that be?
That would be Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Hey, guys, how's it going? I worked with Greg's sister, and I needed a body shop, and I took my car into his place, and they did fantastic, great work. Very good, very helpful, very clean, and got it back to me in a reasonable amount of time.
So
I was very happy with
body work. Well, thank you for that. Thank you. Are you married to Greg's sister by chance?
No, she lives in Nebraska. We worked for the post office, and I had enough of cold weather.
I'm just kidding.
I just want to say, make sure Greg gets his pair of Hager slacks and $100 gift card for appearing on the show.
Oh, you think that that's worth it, huh? You know, he asked me for a Speedo is what he asked me for. So.
No, but, the shop is great, and the people were fantastic and the very, very helpful.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
I appreciate
okay.
that.
Yeah. And I'm going to get you a Speedo for that one. I'm going to have it framed, and I'm going to turn around. Let me see what size.
I think I'd rather have an oil change.
and what was the name of that caller?
Chris, I think.
Chris, that's right. I got to log him down and say, add a boy for Phoenix Body Works because I like to keep those. And it's nice because oftentimes you get into that kind of thing, and everybody just heard you take a drink of your ice.
Sorry.
I'm just teasing you. Have we got anybody else?
Oh, nope. The lines are open.
All righty. Well, let me tell you about Harker's Auto in Phoenix. Bob has a kid named Jeremy, and Jeremy has passed every ASC test that anybody ever has. He's one of two technicians that have been able to do that in the entire United States. He's young, he's smart, I've had him on the show, and for him to pass all those tests in our industry is well past a doctorate or anything like that at all. If you were a doctor that could handle elephants to mice, girls and boys, and all the waterfowl and everything else that's there, you would be akin to Jeremy. And you can find him at at Larry Harker's Auto. I had somebody else's name in front of me, and I knew it wasn't right. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and they've been around since 1967. And Jeremy is related to, I think, one of the daughters of Bob and Ellen. So if you're in that area, then Larry Harker's is a good place. They do oil changes. But more important than that, if you have a problem nobody else in town can fix, that would probably be a place I would send you to because they're very good at doing just that. So that's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So, has any cars kind of eaten you up lately that you know of?
Well, not me.
Okay.
Personally.
All right.
What I like is that how you can take a car that has the clear coat peeling off and you can take it over to Phoenix Body Works.
And yeah?
And they can scrub it down with SOS. And reapply the clear, and it looks better than it did.
A little Ajax with some SOS, and that's all it takes.
Yeah.
It's not true, Tom. I know you suggested that to me, but it doesn't work.
Well, and then how much can
Wisconsin
that SOS and Ajax
wheels.
Cost?
That's cheap.
You know what I'm saying? You got two guys, one on each side of the car, right. SOS, Ajax. Get the buffer out, a couple hundred dollars.
Right.
How do you do, Greg?
Yeah.
No, that's not good advice at all. Basically, if the clear coat's going bad, a lot of people will think that they have to come to the shop and get it clear coated, and that doesn't work. You have to actually sand it all down, base coat, and clear coat it again.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
And we've talked before that clear coat is paint with no pigment. You said that, and I thought that that's a great description of what clear coat is.
Yes, and it when it gets thin from buffing and waxing and so forth, and the sun on it, especially on roofs, so go first because it's closest to the sun, it starts peeling, and you just have to repaint. You can't just re-clear coat.
All righty, we got one more caller. We're going to have to be swift on this. Who we're going to talk to?
We're going to talk to Ken.
Ken, we got to be fast, so go ahead. Tell us what you got.
Okay. I have a 2013 diesel Duramax. Wanting to know if you guys had any trucks come in with the CP4 going out, would it be a good idea to switch to CP3?
Tom, I got an idea for you. Have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay, 480-598-1234, ask for Alan. In addition to that, you're going to call Strictly Diesel up in the north side of the city, Pinnacle Peak and I-17, you're going to talk to Nate, and you're going to talk to him. So between those two guys that know more about diesels than anything Tom and I know, I think you would get an answer. But start with symptoms and what's going on, and then here's the options I think I'm facing. That's the easiest way to approach that with a auto repair shop. So, again, Nate at Strictly Diesel. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and I gave you Alan's phone number, 480-598-1234, And I'm sure one of those two guys can answer your question because two things. Number one, Tom and I don't have a damn clue of what you're talking about. And number two, we're running short on time. So thank you for spending your Saturday, Mr. Tom.
Oh, you bet.
Action Auto, northwest corner of I-17 and
Deer Valley.
I know. I was just kidding you. And then we got Greg from Phoenix Body Work on 19th Avenue, a mile north of the 101, a mile east of the I-17.
Yes, sir.
So that's it. And you've been in business how many years?
We're at 37 years.
Okay. And it's under the same management.
Yes, I started the shop.
And your wife still loves you after all those years?
Yes.
Okay, good. Tom, how many years?
It's been 23 or 4-ish.
Okay.
Maybe more. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I tell people
I've been married. Yeah. Long time.
Okay. I tell people that's an important consideration. If the guy that runs the shop has been in business for a very long time, and we all know that there's a lot of guys that don't make 2 or 3 or 4 years, and he's got a little bit of platinum or chrome hair than usual, and there's a little dirt underneath his fingernails, that's going to be a good shop. Except for the painters, and you want to see a little paint on their pants and stuff like that. So anyway, thanks both of you. Greg,
thank you, Tom.
From Phoenix Motor, and Tom from Action Auto. And if you have any questions, Mark at MarkSalem.com.